Blog Talk Radio.
On point today on this sad and tragic day in America. I'm Don Allen, and broadcasting over in Studio B with me today is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing?
Fine, Mr. Allen, as pertains to one's own personal situation, safety, and et cetera. But clearly, our condolences go out, first of all, to Newtown, Connecticut, to the victims of the brutal massacre, execution style, in that small enclave there in the south, kind of the south east corner of Connecticut, about 80 miles down north of New York City. The Connecticut State Police, as we speak, are releasing the names of all of the victims. The total now seems to be, Mr. Allen, 28, with 20 of those being children, innocent children, if you will, victims of this terrible carnage, ages 5 to 10.
Yeah, it says here on the website for the police, 18 children were pronounced dead at the scene, 2 children were transferred to Danbury Hospital and later pronounced dead, and 6 adult victims were also pronounced dead at the scene.
Right, and so, then you have the shooter making 27 and his mother making 28. His mother's body was found in the family home there in Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook neighborhood, kind of name for the elementary school there in Newtown, Connecticut. So that would confirm the 28. 20 children, 6 adults, including the principal and the school psychiatrist, by the way. And that's for a total of 26. And then the mother, and of course, the gunman, the assassin, the man who displayed so much anger in carrying out this carnage, single-handedly, apparently. Though I have to feel, Mr. Allen, and we've talked about this in the production meetings, his brother and others, you know, you kind of would think that maybe he didn't lay out the plan to them, but certainly they must have had some kind of signals from him.
Yeah, and you know, if you look, Mr. Edwards, throughout the history in talking about it, if you consider the profiles of the most notorious mass killers in history, like Hitler, Stalin, John Wayne Gacy, Lucky Luciano, Jim Jones, Charles Manson, all these white men of European descent, and selecting role models, some people tend to look for a bit of their selves and the people they look up to. And I mean, granted, these are stomach-turning role models, but like it or not, some people do look at them as role models.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's a pattern, because history has established a precedent for these people, these killers, these psychopaths. And
yes.
So, I mean, if someone is like paranoid, narcissistic, with a victim mentality, and is longing to be noticed, they'll go in extremes to get the reaction from society they seek. And I think in this case, this guy just, you know, partly because of the mainstream media, and this is my opinion, Mr. Edwards, partly because of mainstream media and the past history of like the Batman gunman in Colorado, we don't know his status as of today. We really don't. It's like it happened, it was sensationalized, and now it's kind of tucked away. So it's very interesting, and I guess my point is, like, we will never really find out what triggered this guy to go in and shoot innocent children.
Absolutely. Execution style. We want to continue to, unfortunately, emphasize that. And by the way, our phone lines are open here.
Yeah, yes, they are. And our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We'd really like to hear from some of our listeners today. We're going to be talking a lot about this during this hour show and some of the reactions. Mr. Edwards, if you let me share with you, I was driving home yesterday and actually got a telephone call from my father-in-law who was just outraged. And I had heard the initial reports, and like some people who heard the initial reports, you know, it was a school shooting, and you thought maybe one or two or someone got shot. But after I hung up, I turned on the radio, and it hit me. My heart became so heavy. My stomach got upset. I stopped everything that I was doing. I stopped working. I went to the daycare, picked up my son, and we came back to the house and played and watched TV for the rest of the day.
And your son is how old, Don?
He is 20 months old.
20 months. Okay. See, I mean, that's... Let me just say also, and again, you have our phone number. The lines are open if people want to give their observations about this tragedy, which has become too frequent in the United States of America. I must also indicate my heartfelt support, not only for the families, but for the president of our nation, President Barack Obama.
Yeah.
I thought he was very presidential yesterday at around 3:30 Eastern Standard Time as he addressed the nation. I find it interesting some of the conservative commentators talking in terms that he displayed emotion when clearly there were tears in his eyes. I mean, this is a man that has two teenage daughters, if you will, and he was talking and expressing his observations both as president of the United States but also as a father.
Mm-hmm.
And I was politically, let me say it like that, I was politically moved by the delivery, if you will, and the sensitivity and compassion that President Barack Obama showed yesterday.
Absolutely.
Particularly in light of the kinds of attacks that have been leveled against him for the last 4.5 years. So I think it's important to say that, if you will, Mr. Allen, that this president, irrespective of his race, creed, national origin, place of birth, was very, very presidential on behalf of the United States of America.
Yes, yes. And I actually, that press conference, I know that we watched again here in the studio. I mean, it was moving politically, emotionally. And I think that the president did a great job in on how he handled the message to the American people on yesterday. And with that said, you know, I'm kind of shocked, Mr. Edwards, by the local news media. We do have a caller, so we're just going to go ahead and let you call.
Let's go ahead. The callers are important.
Yes, yes. You're live on the air. Go ahead. Who am I speaking with?
Yeah, my name is Vaughn, and what do you say to this? But I'm relating this to with white males taking these lives like this back to where I remember hearing about the 1920s when the stock market crashed and all these white males committed suicide. And I'm just wondering, could it be something in society today that's making them, the stress of society has gotten to the point where it's gone beyond minorities, it's gone to white males, and they just seem to act out. But their acting out is not just taking their lives, but taking as many lives as possible. Because from what I'm hearing in the news, this kid who did his killing had a genius IQ. And I also remember they said the same thing. Well, not the same thing, but the guy in Denver, he had a...
Aurora, Colorado, you're actually...
Yeah, he was working on his master. So why are these people who such, you know, strong minds would do this? And I'm thinking maybe it's the stress of society has moved beyond just the minorities, but onto the larger population.
And you're absolutely...
First of all, appreciate your comments, sir. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
I think he's absolutely on point. You know, in a way, it seems absurd to suggest that middle-class suburban white men are more susceptible to hopelessness, despair, depression than others. But there are those in an oppressive, violent environment who have the sources of distress are fairly are evident. And but if you live in an environment where you're supposed to be happy and content about your life and you're not, who's to blame? Now, this internalized hatred, I think, can turn into internalized violence, which then can be expressed outwardly. And I think this is what happened, part of what happened in this case. This guy, I mean, he snapped. He just snapped. It wasn't what he had planned. Life wasn't what he had planned on it being. So
absolutely. By the way, I want to compliment the caller, if he's still with us.
Yes, he is.
His depth and perception, because the racial piece of it, though, he clearly indicated that we've probably gone beyond the racial identification per se as it pertains to this craziness. But it is one of the things, and I talked about this on one of my radio programs after the situation in Jonesboro and Paducah and in Oregon, and I said that one of the serious ethical deficiencies in this country, sir, was that we were not prepared as a nation to talk about that elephant in the room, and that was the disproportionate number of white males in this nation that had been involved in these kind of heinous actions. Now, people of color, you know, the Chinese national in Blacksburg, Virginia, at Virginia Tech, yes, the Washington, D.C. sniper, and, of course, he was executed for his actions and terrorizing, but it's very limited. And I know people will try to come back and say, well, you know, you black people are killing your youth in the streets of Chicago and et cetera. And we certainly know that. And there are reasons that certainly African-American community. But this pattern and practice of this individual lone wolf, though in the case of Columbine and Jonesboro, there were two individuals working together, and then after killing the people, committed, you know, suicide together as part of a suicide pact. But we just have a disproportion. It's just like, you know, they like to talk about gangs and drugs and et cetera, and they always talk in terms of disproportionate number of African-Americans. Well, we have a very disproportionate number of white males in this country that seem to be extremely angry. And seem to want to advance that anger by taking the maximum course of action, and that is to kill innocent people, to slay innocent people, to assassinate innocent people. And if we don't, and my colleague, sir, had just said this earlier in a production meeting, if we don't begin to talk in terms of what is driving people, we will not be able to get into a discussion about gun control. Rest assured that I'm telling you what's very, very factual.
Yeah, and caller, we'd like to thank you for calling, Mr. Edwards. We have another call.
Let's get him.
You're live on the air. Who's calling? Hello.
Oh, yeah.
You're live on the air. We'll put you there.
My brother.
You're live on the air. May I ask who's calling?
Trish Edwards.
Hi, Trish. How are you?
Trish, how you doing?
All right, and you? Okay,
name,
and you?
The namesake.
Yeah,
what can we do for you?
Our Facebook friend here.
Okay, I'm calling about a relative of mine, Anton Warren, that had passed away back in May of 2010. May 21st.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, him and his good friend of his, Ramon Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was calling in, and I find it very strange that the roommate had contacted me, you know, several months after they passed away. And me and him, you know, we sort of had some beef words with each other. And he was telling me that he had told my nephew's father, who had killed my nephew, and told his brother. And I find it very strange that if he told, why no one is not arrested for it?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think that we had the father as well as the mothers of both the deceased on our program here 4 weeks ago, a month ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to the father privately, he never mentioned that particular feature, if you will, but I do know that the police records show that the and I'm pretty sure you and I are talking about the same person when you talk about the roommate, the gentleman that allegedly came in, went and brushed his teeth, went to the icebox,
yeah,
and allegedly sashayed to the back room and found this horrible scene. My understanding is that he actually called someone in, I think it was Hammond or East Chicago, about a half hour after this thing happened, and apparently before he arrived at the house, and had all the details, the gruesome details of the torture, murder, / execution. What we reported here, both last week and 2 weeks before that, that the police maintained at the point that the gentleman in question lawyered up, that there was really nothing they could do because they did not feel they had enough evidence to charge him. And based on that, they could not, challenge his story about, you know, how he came upon the death scene, how he came into the house, that kind of thing. Also, last week we had a young lady calling fairly from your part of the country who talked in terms of the shooting of the dog as an example and why that happened. There are a lot of questions. This case took place in 2010. Mr. Allen and myself both agree that there has certainly not been a significant amount of effort of late. As we promised the family a month ago, I talked to the head of homicide, and in fact, there was a controversy about the fact that the homicide detective that is still assigned to the case really hasn't talked to any of the relatives, the mothers, and the one father that we have been talking to. They've not been giving him any updates, and it does not seem on this end up here in Minnesota that they put a lot of effort into what is a disturbing number of unsolved murders here in our city of African Americans.
Right. Okay, but we know in our hearts who is all involved in this, and the police knows too, and I just really wish that they could just do their job right and arrest these people that's involved in this situation, because it just break my heart to just lose a loved one like that, you know, and they not doing nothing about it.
Absolutely.
You know, it breaks my heart when I come to the north side and I try my best not to ride past his house and I just break down because I think about that, you know, very moment when it happened to him. You know.
Well, we would encourage you to continue to feel free to give us a call, and as long as we're on the air, we will continue to periodically touch on this. In fact, I'm putting together kind of a list of, you know, unsolved cold case murders of African Americans here in this city just in the last decade, if you will. So we will continue to try to be vigilant, and we will continue to try to keep our community alert, if you will. And for those that are concerned, feel free to call in. I want to thank you for taking the time to call us.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we do have another call.
Let's get them in.
A caller, you're live on the air. Your name, where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air, sir.
Ooh.
He didn't realize that he had hooked into the, and Mr. Allen has indicated how we try to make sure that we ask people, do they want to be on the air, or are they just listening? So there's a technique that Mr. Allen is very proficient in. Maybe we'll help people out. But again, Mr. Allen, you know, lay that number out if you would.
Yeah, sure. And by the way, everyone, you're listening to On Point with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards and myself, Don Allen, and we're broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in downtown Minneapolis. The call-in number today is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We invite you to call in, and we're talking about the slayings in Connecticut. And
Newtown, Connecticut. Let's give the most current breakdown as we have it at this particular moment. We have already indicated, and we are watching our television monitors in studio, the Connecticut State Police about, I don't know, 30 minutes ago released the names of the victims in that tragic carnage there, the elementary school tragedy. Those names have been posted, if you will. Go to the website of the Connecticut State Police. In fact, the Lieutenant Paul Vance, it seems to be the lead spokesperson for the Connecticut State Police. But the names have been made public. Autopsies, you know, and we said this at the top of the program about 15 minutes ago, Autopsies are still going on. One of the things the medical examiner has indicated in Connecticut is that all of these children, ages 5 to 10, were shot multiple times. And so that, you know, that in itself, Mr. Allen, displays just a rage. And I just can't not understand how a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10-year-old can create that kind of rage in a human being. I don't know what it is that they could have done to make him have that rage. Now, we were talking as our call started coming in about once again, and we had a caller, our first caller was really on top of his game, Mr. Allen, when he pointed out how all these individuals, Caucasian individuals, are always identified as brilliant, extremely intelligent, highly intelligent,
yes,
highly motivated. Also, let me say this, and we talked about it last night. I talked about it with some colleagues around the country. The hamlet of Newtown, Connecticut, very scenic, if you will, deep in the woods there of what basically is southern Connecticut. What I couldn't quite understand for an enclave that was as safe as it, you know, we're being told it was, why the mother, who has officially been identified, apparently, why she had such an arsenal in her home. Now, a relative of hers who lives in Chicago, as well as a relative who is a former FBI agent who resides in Kansas City, Missouri, and was on national television approximately an hour and a half ago, so that, you know, for the naysayers saying that we're just making stuff up, they indicated that the mother was a survivalist, was part of the survivalist group. And initially you would dismiss that, Mr. Allen. You would say, well, that's just some loose talk that cannot be substantiated or confirmed. But all of the guns that were used by Adam yesterday, in that carnage, if you will, all of those weapons, a rifle and three handguns, actually he had a second rifle in the trunk of the car,
wow,
were all bought by his mother. And
yeah,
so I'm trying to figure out what was the need for that kind of weaponry and significant volumes of ammunition. If you were living in such a, you know, a safe enclave, unless you were expecting the dark forces of terror to come up from New York City or down from Boston, you know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? And that, I think, is what necessitates a more honest discussion in America about white rage. Okay?
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's something that we are told that we should not use as journalists. We shouldn't talk about white rage. Which is predicated upon the sense that white privilege is, in fact, in danger.
Yes, and that's part of the bigger picture and the bigger problems. Mr. Edwards, I just posted a link in the chat room of a picture from the Today Show of Adam Lanza, the alleged shooter at this point. And the guy, if you can't look at folks like this walking down the street and see something's wrong with them, you know, then, I mean, you got some issues, okay? Because this guy, he just, you don't even feel right looking at the picture. But
it's that kind of picture?
It's that kind
Very
of picture.
Very good. We posted that on your website on IBNN. Good,
Mr. Yes, I posted it, and I also posted a link on in the chat room here, and we have a caller here.
All right, Gus, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yes, caller. You're live on the air.
Yeah, Yeah, Mr. Edwards,
mm-hmm.
I believe you're more intelligent to make a comment like that, sir. White rage. What about
mm-hmm.
the black in the community carrying guns and shooting their own children?
And when was the most recent case that happened?
Well, it doesn't matter, sir, but it's continuing over the country.
Doesn't matter? Well, then how do you make a statement like that? But go ahead. What is your question and issue, sir?
Well, the issue is, aren't you guys talking about blacks in the community shooting each other?
Well, we talk about blacks all the time. In fact, sir, I cannot speak and will not speak for Mr. Allen on something like this, but I have been in the forefront of talking in terms of black violence against ourselves for many, many years, probably even before maybe, you know, you were born. So I don't apologize for having the right and reserving the right to raise the question about white rage. You see, here's where I deal with the hypothesis that you're trying to indicate over these airwaves. That was a Caucasian that shot those children and six adults and killed his own mother who gave birth to him. that was a Caucasian, and so I think we have a right
to
talk
also
in terms of his race, and so in that he happens to be white. I wouldn't talk in terms of black rage coming from a white man, nor would I talk about white rage coming from a black man. What kind of logic and sense, sir, would that make?
Well, sir, do you believe in black rage?
Certainly there's black rage. Certainly.
Okay, so
certainly. We have black rage and white rage. But I repeat again, sir, you must not have been listening. What logic and what sense intellectually and intelligently would it make for me to say that Adam was displaying black rage and he is a Caucasian, he is a white man who took the lives of 20 children, sir, ages 5 to 10. And I don't know if you have any children within that age category, et cetera, but you would be enraged and ticked off, and we would say that you were a black man, I assume you're black, who was angry. And so you were displaying black anger and black rage. I'm trying to work with
you. Well, yes, sir. It's people like you that always play this race card.
Oh, the race card. Okay.
What do you mean the race card? Well, I need a piece of this. What do you mean the race card? I mean, how is this the race card when historically, psychologically, and practically, all throughout history, the mass murders in school theaters of quite a few people have been conducted or executed by white males. And if you understand, and if you understand the topic of the show today, we are not being accusatory, but we're trying to talk about things that the mainstream media is not talking about. Number one. Number two, you get on, you listen to these stations, these mainstream liberal stations, they're saying that, oh, he might have been depressed. Now, Mr. Black Man on the other end, now if we, as a black man, go out and shoot and kill someone, they don't say, oh, he might have been depressed or he was going through some changes or this and that. We're evil. We're bad, and we need to be locked up.
I think you need to. You need to read Johnny Northside's columns. He exposes all the black thugs. You know, these guys are shooting up people in their own community. What are you guys doing about it? What's the solution?
Well, again, like I said, I've been involved with it for a long time of trying to bring attention and working on behalf of black people, my people, to deal with this and et cetera. Well, we, you know, there are a lot of things out here and a lot of reasons for the conditions, but that's not what we're talking about. That's not what happened, sir, in Newtown, Connecticut. I assume you know where Connecticut is. That's not what happened yesterday. See, that wasn't a black man, you understand, carrying four guns, if you will, actually five when you talk about the other rifle. See, that wasn't a black man carrying out black rage. That was a white man carrying out white rage. You know, let's face it, sir. Anytime a man takes the life of the person that gave birth to him, He's pretty angry. Okay, but if you feel comfortable with saying that the white murderer in Newtown, Connecticut, was displaying black rage, you go right ahead and do that, sir. I don't know what the mentality and level of your associates and friends are, but you do that. What are you saying, sir? Go ahead.
Where's Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton? They're not speaking up about this.
See, that's not true, sir. Apparently, you're not as vigilant as I thought. Reverend Sharpton dedicated his entire program last night to Newtown, Connecticut. So,
He got paid a check. They wrote a check to him.
Everybody gets a check, the way I understand it. The police that arrived at the scene were getting paid.
Mr. Edwards, he has left the airways of the studio. The general manager and engineer nodded at me, and he is no longer on the air.
Okay.
And so we have a lot going on. In the chat room, someone wrote me, check this out, a little paradox it is. I am a light-skinned person of mixed race and was hired at a store. A black man came into the office after I was hired and fired me and banned me from the store. Sometimes this man, you know, sir, I mean, rather than typing all this so we can understand the context and your claim and your warrant and your data regarding your story, if you just call in, the call-in number is 347-426-3904. We'd love to get your story on the air.
Mr. Allen, let me say this. That's an interesting text coming from that individual, because just last week, see, I'm always fascinated by people and how they think that they're operating. Just last week, you reported on a lawsuit dealing with a corporation in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
in which the manager of the store became so frustrated with the fact that corporate was telling him to employ more African Americans that he started firing them, and was detected making the statement that he was too many blacks working here.
Mm-hmm.
Now that seems like a reverse that you just got. That text message sounds like somebody was listening to the program last week, was looking for some way to create a reverse situation. But see, here's what we're talking about: a national tragedy, as the President of the United States said, has broke the hearts of many. Maybe there are many out there, those that hearts weren't broken. Those are the ones you better watch out for. But we're talking about that today here. You know, if folks want us to get into the black rage, you know, we certainly would do that. In fact, I find it interesting that no one had anything to say about the brutal murder of two young African Americans here in 2010, and which we have been the only media, as I understand it, to continue to talk about that, just as we're the only media to talk in terms of what is happening in the case of Mr. Booker. And by the way, let's just get to that too, because we're coming up on a half hour. We are at a half hour. This past Thursday, in a Hennepin County District Court room, Mr. Booker, who was being arraigned, he was coming in to plea. This would have been his second appearance. Federal ATF agents, marshals, and et cetera, stormed the courtroom, arrested Mr. Booker. For those of you that have been following us in this story for the last almost month, arrested him, took him into custody, took him to the federal holding facility at Elk River, Minnesota, which is about, 25, 30 miles north of us. He was taken before a federal magistrate. He is charged with being a felon in possession of a gun. He is facing 15 years, though there is nothing to tie the gun to him, other than Minneapolis police officers said that 2 days after searching the car, a continued search of the car that he was in, which is not his automobile, that Mr. Booker, because he was some way or another in close proximity, 2 days later, that he is being charged by the federal authorities. So Mr. Booker is now looking at 15 years. Now, let me say this, Mr. Allen, and maybe we'll see what kind of black concerns. We won't use rage, because you use rage when people come out and hurt other people. It was ironic, Mr. Allen, that the federal authorities showed up to take this man into custody while he stood in a state courtroom, mm-hmm. attempting to have his circumstances and the charges against him adjudicated. It came at the same time, Mr. Allen, that the videotape from the Minneapolis squad cars of the horrific beating, which almost took Mr. Booker's life on November 20th, 2012, at approximately 2:30 in the afternoon, the videos were turned over to the Meshbecher law firm, who are representing Mr. Booker in the criminal complaint. And those are that video, those pictures are extremely graphic, of showing the police beating him into unconsciousness and continuing to beat him while he was unconscious, and finally having to have calling an ambulance to take him to to North Memorial, which is about five blocks away from the site of the assault on him, where he was unconscious for over 24 hours. I repeat again, it was rather ironic that federal authorities moved on him to indicate that he was identified as being in close proximity to a weapon and he is a felon. By the way, his felony was domestic abuse, if you will. He and his girlfriend got into an altercation. She indicated he really had not beaten her, but that she had jumped out of the car, okay? He was a young man. This was almost a decade ago. He did not understand that you will always carry a felony with you. But anyways, I find it rather ironic that this federal action was taken against him at a time when the video was finally turned over to his criminal attorneys, and that video confirms what Donnie and Ronnie have been saying since the 28th, 29th of November. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get some calls on that.
Yes, yes.
Phone line's still open. Don, just give that number again.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. Again, that's 347-426-3904. And then, you know, something that struck me, Mr. Edwards, is that, excuse me, there's a lot of coming out of the woodwork talking about anti-gun violence rallies. Like tonight, there was a anti-gun violence rally in South Minneapolis on 40th Street and Nicollet at 6 p.m. And this person asked, how secure is the Minneapolis public schools against such violence? And I have a real problem when people use that bias to try to scare other folks into wondering, you know, how secure you are. You know, we're not a society that's able or can afford to walk around looking over our shoulders all day. You know, it just is not going to happen. And when these, you know, zealots out here, to me, zealots talk about this, you know, it has to be gun control, this and that. It's not, because it's not a gun control issue. It's the person who has the gun in his hand. It's that individual responsible for pulling the trigger. Now, I can see if this is some magic circus land where these guns are flying around just going off by themselves, but that's not the case.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And again, we're welcoming calls on three specific issues that have been discussed already on this program, the absolute tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, the 2010 murder of two young African Americans, which has gone on unsolved, and certainly the situation with Demario Booker, a young African American beaten almost to death by Minneapolis police inside of the city of Robbinsdale on the 20th of November. Phone lines are open. We welcome any examination or questions that people may have.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and people are up in arms about this because I'm looking here at the e-democracy, and you have folks posting, you know, we're going to have this gun violence rally, and then the moderator of e-democracy, Matt Perry, hurried up and got on here and says this discussion is not within the scope of the Minneapolis Forum, which means that
what discussion?
The discussion regarding gun violence in response in today's shooting was the title started
yesterday's
here.
Yesterday's shooting. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And so I find it pretty interesting because they do try to sanitize all these little e-outlets, e-democracy outlets, and that are ran by, again, middle-class white males, heterosexual white males who have a lot of privilege. And so, I mean, I have huge issue with that. And again, the other caller, you know, the Black Rage guy that was calling, I mean, I'm not even trying to comment on what he's saying other than Mr. Edwards. These folks, it's been proven in history. And just if you look back in the recent shootings, the theater, we'll just go back to the theater that, you know, some cases, these white males are privileged, very privileged, and have opportunities that are not afforded to your everyday, you know, African-American in this case. And so when someone gets upset with me for just stating the fact, that's too bad. You know, this guy, his mom and dad were divorced. His dad is the VP of taxes for GE Energy. And it's like the Batman shooters. His dad was part of the LIBOR scandal. And so, I mean, you have to find out where these people are coming from and how they think they can just go out and have permission to raise hell. Again, they want to call attention to themselves because society isn't giving them the attention that they think they're privileged to.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I've been watching Profilers for the last 28 hours, who have certainly been attempting to explain how this young man, some way or another, was not responsible because he had all kinds of problems emotionally and otherwise. And yet that is always the modus operandi of these shootings, if you will, of these acts of terror in which so many innocent people are caught up. In fact, you know, it's interesting because we may have been looking at a real tragic week. I mean, it's tragic enough But the shooting in Portland, Oregon, there the shooter who killed two people, wounded a third, and then killed himself.
Yeah.
If his weapon had not jammed, he was using a AR-14 rifle. If his weapon had not jammed, he, particularly, and there were over 10,000 people in the mall that day. That mall is like, you know, the same size as almost the Mall of America here in the Twin Cities. He could have probably, you know, taken the life of 15, 20, 25, 30 additional people, particularly in those kinds of close quarters. And so this just seems to be a pattern in which, you know, folks are angry and upset, and most of the time they will commit suicide. But then I find it interesting that in the Aurora, Colorado situation, that young man was brilliant enough to know that he wasn't going to take his life and he was going to become a celebrity.
Yeah, exactly.
Just as our friend did in the shooting in Tulsa, Tucson, that removed really from the American political scene a very dynamic representative of the House of Representatives, Ms. Gifford, you know, and killed six other people that particular day. I mean, this person was also identified as a person who was of great mental capacity and et cetera. And that seems to be the theme, okay? Whereas, on the other hand, in the situations in Chicago, as an example, which everyone wants to address, black-on-black crime, or if it's here in the Twin Cities, your gunmen, whenever they're caught, which is percentage-wise is pretty low, always referred to as some kind of savage gangbanger. Gangbanger meaning someone of low mentality, intellect, and et cetera. I mean, you know, you and I as black men understand. We've been around long enough to understand the code words, if you will. But I repeat again, until the United States of America and the American people enter into a real honest discussion about what is driving these people to utilize this thing called a weapon/gun, then you're not going to be able to convince the gun lobby and specifically the manufacturers. See, if you've ever noticed, no one really concentrates on the manufacturers of guns because people always maintain we need to have weapons to protect ourselves from whatever that dark threat is, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, but I would suggest that they should do like in the days of the anti-war situation when there was quite a bit of movement against the former Minnesota company called Honeywell, which is now basically gone, is that they should march on the ordnance depots, if you will, where they make, and they should march on the homes of the gun executives. You know what I mean? Go out there to Wayzata. You know what I mean? Go out to Chanhassen. Particularly maybe on Christmas Eve, and go out 400 or 500 strong and sing hymns and themes and camp in on the lawn of these individuals who either are direct executives of these gun manufacturers or et cetera, or who own, you know, millions of dollars of stock and et cetera. I mean, these people are indicating how bright they are. They have the capacity to do the research. Right, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, exactly.
And I want to be helpful and make a recommendation that if you really want to talk in terms of start dealing with gun violence in America, then you need to broaden the scope of and the honesty of your reflections and beginning to develop the strategy. Because if President Barack Obama decides after the tragedy of yesterday that he wants to take on the gun lobby in America, I hope that all these people that are, you know, holding candles and talking in terms of the terror that exists when, you know, somebody runs amok, I hope they're ready to stand with the president. And I hope they're able and prepared to use the same tactics that the Tea Party used in 2009 leading up to a successful election in 2010. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we're just trying here on point, we're just trying to you know, just kind of introduce some strategy because people always start, but they never have a strategy.
Yeah, and they don't. And to those, you know, again, I have to say this, Mr. Edwards. So to those that are out there that say, you know, well, what are you doing? What are you guys doing? Well, I have this to say to them. We are actually staying in our lane and doing what we were doing, what we do best.
Mm-hmm.
I says, you have community wannabe activists, you have clergy, you have leaders of nonprofit organizations, flagship. You know, you won't. These are the same people, Mr. Edwards, that will not pick up a phone and call Scott Gray at the Urban League.
Mm-hmm.
They won't call Mr. McDonald at the Council on Black Minnesotans. They won't call these people, but they feel, you know, like they can pick up the phone and call us and try to put us on Front Street. And again, they're coming to war with a battle of wits with no armament, you know, because they will just get talked right back down.
You know what I call it, Don?
What's that?
A knight without a without a horse and armor.
Yeah, exactly.
and maybe somebody can give them a job and they can buy that.
And then I'm a little bit upset too, Mr. Edwards, with this. This Tavis Smiley, you know, he went on the Jay Leno show and argued that if there had been more laws, this tragedy would have been averted. You know, and I'm
is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, dude, you can have laws of the yin yang, and Tavis Smiley, you know, I'm actually ashamed of this because. You know, like we talked about early in the production meeting, you know, these laws or these black codes in like Mississippi were the same laws and codes that kept freedmen unarmed so
mm-hmm.
the white wouldn't be afraid of them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it made us weak. I mean, a Negro with a weapon is very strong. Okay. And so during that time, they made sure that if blacks were caught with weapons, and these are these laws that they're talking about, it will further disenfranchise, you know.
Mr. Allen, on that particular point, you just said something that kind of jogged my interest as it pertains to history. There's a book out, it was published in 2009, called The Massacre at Colfax, Louisiana, and it dealt with an event in 1873 in which over 150 black militiamen who had been engaged for a week in battles with former Confederates and what was then becoming the new Ku Klux Klan. Anyways, they made the mistake of surrendering, and all 150 were slaughtered in front of the courthouse there in Colfax, Louisiana. And, you know, there's some of y'all listening, y'all from Louisiana, Colfax in between Baton Rouge and Shreveport, y'all know what I'm talking about. In fact, they have a memorial there in the courthouse square at Colfax, Louisiana, in 2012, think about it, saying that this is a memorial to the white citizens who died defending us against the nigger scourge, if you will. And I'd really hate to use that word, but that's the word that's on the plaque there in front of the courthouse in Colfax, Louisiana. But the book is much deeper than that, because it was the incident at Colfax, Louisiana in 1873, which led to the Supreme Court decision in the matter of the disenfranchisement, the renewed and new disenfranchisement of the newly quote-unquote freed Negro. And that, you know, by 1880, 1881, 1882, it was damn near back to business as usual. I mean, I hate to say it like that. Good point that you made in doing that, and I just wanted to give a literary, quote-unquote, directive. The Massacre at Colfax, Louisiana.
Yes.
Heck of a book. Any calls? Anything we got in? Or did
we
shut it down?
No callers right now, but I'm going to check over here, just looking out the window at this kind of gray sky, but nice out. We'll get out in it later, but no callers from the engineering booth. They're not. Yeah, nothing right now. Again, that call-in number, if you have anything to say in the last 10 minutes of the show here, we'd like to make a statement regarding the recent murders of these children and teachers. Please call in 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And you're listening to On Point on Blog Radio.
Mr. Allen, let me just cut in and say this. Our column for this coming week in the powerful and a very large and first black newspaper, quote-unquote, state of Minnesota. Well, one of the first black. We talk about and this is something we soon obviously will be getting into in about 3 weeks. We're talking in terms of election 2013 here in the city of Minneapolis. And we identify some of the contenders, if you will, as well as the fact that Mayor R.T. Ryback seems to be in trouble. And the reason he's basically been keeping a very low profile. And what has driven this, by the way, Mr. Allen, is the revelation that Minneapolis doesn't have its portion of the money to pay for the stadium.
Ah.
Yeah, they were supposed to put in $150 million right up front. State was going to put in $300 million, and, of course, the Vikings were being expected to put up the rest.
And Mr. Edwards,
well,
call, by the way.
Let's get it. Always cut us off. Let's get it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're live on the air.
Yes, thank you. Yes, this is Bob calling from Maryland. How are you doing this evening?
Fine, sir. Good to hear your voice.
Yes. Thank you. I have not. Well, I'm saying my sympathies definitely go out to the families of Newtown, Connecticut. Having young children, it is definitely it's a woeful tragedy. I have not been following it the last 24 hours. I've been busy with other things, just been listening to your show. I can't make a rhyme or reason out of it, to be honest with you, because my understanding is that the mother worked at the school and she was, I don't know if he killed
let,
her.
Let me correct that, sir. And this is just in the last half hour. The Connecticut State Police, who are the lead investigative entity at this point, until they can find a Islamic conspiracy or something, indicated that the mother was never employed, nor was she employed at the time of this tragedy at the school or with the Newtown, Connecticut School District. So the mother was not a employee of the school district, nor was she in the school.
Oh.
She was slain in the family home.
Oh, wow. I thought they mentioned that she was a kindergarten teacher there. Okay. Wow. I don't know. Well, again, that confounds me even more. I can't make heads or tails. I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out what happened here and if the calls for gun control are worthwhile calls or just trying to not let a tragedy go to waste and make an issue of gun control out of it. I don't know. But now I just wanted to add that immediately the story found its way up to the president. And the president definitely gave his condolences and sympathy. And the media is definitely trying to get to the bottom of what is going on, and that's beautiful and terrific. But my question is, does the nation, does the media in general, it appears that there's a picking and a choosing which stories we're going to run with here. I'm not taking away from what happened in Newtown. I'm definitely not. I'm not measuring tragedies and this and that. I'm not doing that, but I'm just saying, with the shootings that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, last spring.
Absolutely.
That were five blacks were shot on the streets in one day in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Three of them
murdered. And again, two, I don't know, we never know. No, when they say the person has been shot, but not murdered, you don't know if the person is in a wheelchair. You know, the person is living off a feeding tube. You know what I mean?
Or dies later on.
Exactly, as a result of the wound, of the gunshot. Yes, absolutely. But when you have those, and then there's a question of, do we classify it as a hate crime? And the African Americans, in Oklahoma and Tulsa, there was some question whether or not this should be classified as a hate crime. But anyway, my point is, that didn't go no further than Tulsa, to be honest with you.
You're absolutely correct, sir.
If not for the social networking where people are on Facebook and on Twitter making an issue out of this and that, it didn't go to the governor of Oklahoma.
Governor of Oklahoma never commented on it. That's an excellent point.
Let alone the president of the United States.
That's right.
The shooting in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, at the Sikh temple. Once there was a racial angle, a hate crime angle, it sort of lost steam in the media.
It definitely did, and one of the reasons was they got, because, obviously we're close to Milwaukee up here, about 400 miles away. it was clear that the system got to the Sikh leadership, reminded them of the importance of having favorable immigration openings, if you will, and suggested to them that they should say that this was not a hate crime. Though Billy Bob, who also shot and seriously wounded a police officer in that whole vile situation, clearly indicated he came to kill them because he hated those kinds of people, and he identified them, he identified their race, and et cetera. But you're right, that disappeared. Let me say something quickly for our associates and friends in Tulsa. Billy Bob and his partner, by the way, there's a conspiracy, would not have been apprehended, sir, I can tell you this, if, in fact, get this, the head of the special anti-terrorism unit in the Tulsa Police Department is a young African-American. And on the occasion of that shooting, the head of the Tulsa FBI field office was an African-American.
Mm.
They came together that night, put their task force together, got on top of everything, got the license plate, the identification of the truck, and et cetera, and caught Billy Bob and them about 20 miles north of Tulsa and apprehended them. My sense is if they had not been who they were, I'm talking about our two African-American law enforcement officers, one a lieutenant in the Tulsa Police Department, the other the FBI, head of the FBI's field office. I don't know that Billy Bob and them would have ever been apprehended. Now, you got to remember, you're absolutely on point. Billy Bob in the Tulsa situation said, I clearly went into Tulsa that night to kill some niggers because they killed my daddy. Come to find out, he lied about that. His father had attacked an African-American at a motel, and the brother blew him away. Yeah, but you're the first person in a long time I've heard, even other than myself, sir, raise any question about what happened in Tulsa in the spring of 2012.
Yeah.
You know, there was a black grandmother who lost her life. She was in her yard pruning her flowers when Billy Bob and them pulled up, got out, and shot her six times.
Okay,
I didn't hear nobody saying anything about that.
Stand by. We have another caller coming in the last few minutes here.
All right, let's go. Thank our caller from Maryland.
Yeah, thank you, Maryland.
Go ahead.
You're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello? Okay, they disappeared.
They don't even know they're on. They got the music on.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Don, look like we can begin to wrap it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we got about 3.5 minutes left.
Yeah, so we got about 3 minutes left, and you're listening to On Point with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards and myself, Don Allen. Broadcasting live again one more time from the Apple.
Don, let me just give a couple quick updates.
All right.
Let me know when we're down 30 seconds.
I'll do that. Go ahead.
Just rehashing Newtown, Connecticut. Latest information, even as we sit here in studios. The mother was not affiliated with the school, but the mother was the purchaser of all the weapons that were found in the possession of her now deceased son, who apparently committed suicide inside the school after murdering execution style with multiple shots, 20 young babies ages 5 to 10, and 6 adults, including the principal of the school. And then prior to that, his own mother, and then as the final act, if you will, of violence, took his own life. Relatives in places like Chicago and Kansas City, Missouri, of the family, Adams family, have indicated that the mother was a part of a survivalist group, so it'll be interesting to see, as our caller from Maryland so nicely talked about and implied, it'll be interesting to see what kind of twist we put on this. I say this in closing. I cannot quite understand why the mother would have the arsenal that she had if things were as tranquil and as safe in Newtown, Connecticut, as we're being led to believe.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100%. So with that said, Mr. Edwards, we're coming to the two-minute mark. And we do have a caller here real quick. Let's see if we can...
Well, let's call. Let's try to get him in.
Yes, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. Mustafa calling from Minneapolis.
We want to get you in, brother. We only got about a minute and a half left. Go ahead.
Yeah, first, a few things about e-democracy. I agree with Don that it's run by people who just want to control their own ideologies, and they have their own agenda. And the gun control thing, I think it has different meanings for different people. some people, the mostly proud people in this state, they own guns from the governor all the way down to the person next door to me. And but if me and you bring up owning guns, they will freak out, and probably that will tell everybody that why they don't want anybody other than them.
Okay, Mustafa.
Have any kind of power.
We're going to have to
try. Mustafa, appreciate it. Try to get to us a little bit earlier next Saturday, man.
Yeah, thanks, Lucas.
All right, thank you.
All right, Mr. Allen, wrap it up, man. Take it home.